This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online.
Coy, because, you know, this is starting to remind me of the Vanderlinda business that happened last year.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of
the community as a whole knew something was happening
that
was very wrong, and yet it took the leaders in the community a long time to realize what we were demanding.
Issues that he tracks as the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. And my first question I have to ask
Charlottesville Right Now.
Do you think we're going to see more coverage of schools from Charlottesville tomorrow since you're no longer on the school board? This is a small town. People wear many hats. You've been on the county school board, and you've told me it's sort of difficult for Charlottesville tomorrow to cover the schools when you serve on the school board, that and the fact that Charlottesville tomorrow wasn't created to cover the schools. But you've done such a good job covering local news as a nonprofit. You know, long-standing relationship with WINA, with the Daily Progress, a fantastic website. Do you think we might see in the future Charlottesville Tomorrow covering the schools?
Great question, Coy, and thank you for the kind remarks there. You know, I think we are onto a model. I think this is one model for the future of information and community engagement in the work that Charlottesville Tomorrow has been doing over the past 5 years. Cut to the chase, I don't know the answer to that question. Certainly, it was impossible. I wouldn't say it was difficult. It was impossible to do it when I was on the school board.
Yeah.
But now that I'm not on the school board, I'm happy to be, you know, wearing one less hat. And I think it's something for the board of directors of Charlottesville Tomorrow, who make, you know, those decisions and direct, you know, our work and focus in that way as far as picking the issues. This is a conversation we really haven't had since back when we launched Charlottesville Tomorrow. So back then, we were asking, what are those quality of life issues that the community would really benefit by having more information about? And we settled on the water supply plan, transportation, growth and development issues like rezonings, fees, you know, planning commission
information
work.
That helps to make a better citizen. They can participate in their local government.
That's right. They know how to get involved. They know what the timeline is for these things. And oftentimes, as you know, these decisions drag out over many years, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you take an issue like the water supply or the Meadow Creek Parkway, and we created Charlottesville Tomorrow with the idea that people would be able to go to our site, click on a link, and be able to see all of the resources related to that particular topic in the community. You know, I think you raise an interesting question. Certainly, I could keep somebody busy covering University of Virginia, Virginia Community College, and the two local school districts.
And I think you cannot deny, and this is a message for your board members, I don't think you can deny the fact that school issues are critical quality of life issues. I mean, that's one of the main things people look at when they're looking to move, whether you're an employer looking to move your business to an area, or whether you are looking to move your family to an area. If you have school-aged children, that's towards the top of the list. Not water supply, even. You're mainly looking at what's the situation with the schools, the past, the present, and the future. What's going on with the schools?
I mean, obviously, I thought it was important enough to get involved at the school board level. But really, that's when I got the most engaged in the community. When my daughter, Abby, hit second grade, and there were 27 kids in her second grade classroom.
God.
That's what motivated me to go to a PTO meeting, raise my hand, and say, How does this work, and what can we do about it?
Yeah, why is it? How did this class get so big?
And so I think you're right. I think parents are very engaged in this community, and the city and county, both the leaders in both localities, have said that they want high quality public education systems here, and it's very important to the employers in the community as well, especially the University of Virginia. One of the first questions recruits get asked as they're looking at jobs at the university is, how good are the local schools, right?
Yeah, yeah. And if you want to bring in good faculty members and keep them at UVA, you got to have good local public schools for their kids.
And I would give credit to WINA. I mean, Chris Callahan is at all of the city and county school board meetings, and WINA has made a great investment in having a reporter cover those meetings and know what's happening a long period of time.
I agree with you. I think the newsroom is committed to that. I know that the morning show and my program are very committed to as much news as possible as we can get out about the schools. Because frankly, I think there was a time in Charlottesville where, whether it was the Progress or I remember the Observer, we were talking about that, the local weekly paper, the Observer, that some folks may still remember here, started by Kay Peasley years ago. The Observer did fantastic reporting on the local schools. I mean, it was the best. That was, the place to go if you want to know really what was going on with the schools was the Observer. But the Observer is gone. The Progress doesn't do the kind of in-depth reporting on the schools that they used to do. Somebody needs to do it.
I can tell you this. It will certainly be a while before I write a story about my former colleagues on the Albemarle County School Board. I need a little distance between some of my decisions and maybe what they're contemplating next.
Yeah, and I think that would be fair. But hopefully we can see somebody, some organization, take that, whether it's Charlottesville Tomorrow or, you know, whether some news organization wants to join WINA in really being more aggressive about informing the public about what's going on with the schools, because with the economy the way it is, with growth projected the way it is, when the economy returns, that issue is only going to become more and more critical.
Or if growth does not return, I mean, it's going to become very critical in these budget discussions. And Coy, that one place we have always tried to cover the discussion when it touches education has to do with the overall bigger budget questions, right? So with the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors, they recently had a joint retreat with the Albemarle County School Board, and we did cover that. Now, we didn't cover in detail what different school board members had to say about it, but we covered it from the perspective of the Board of Supervisors, and we need to get on the same page with the school division as far as the budget.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And so they started that process by inviting Dr. Bill Boscher to come back to the community. He is with the VCU Commonwealth Education Policy Institute, and he's the one who did the resource utilization studies for both the school board and the Board of Supervisors.
Wasn't Bob Holsworth with him?
I don't know.
Chris Callahan said Bob Holsworth was here with him for that meeting.
I don't know if he was. He wasn't in our meeting.
Oh, okay. All right.
With the school board. But the gist of this meeting and the stories up on SevilleTomorrow.org was that, you know, we're starting the budget process early this year. The fiscal year 2011 budget just started July 1st, but we're already talking about fiscal year 2012, Coy. And what the two boards said is they want to communicate better with each other and about the different budget proposals. They talked for 3 hours, and they said they need to communicate better about what each side's needs were. Supervisor Ken Boyd, who was previously on the school board, said he thought school board members didn't understand the constraints that local government was facing when it came to revenues and the economic recession, and you know, ask for more information, more specifics in the budget proposal. So that's something we're going to keep an eye on. Supervisor Dennis Rooker said, you know, that he thought increasing the number of meetings between the two bodies would be important, that that would help the communications, and that his colleagues on the Board of Supervisors really needed to look closely at the information that was being provided in the budget.
Yeah.
So they can make the best decisions.
So can I just, from just a layman's perspective here, man on the street, guy with a radio show, make an observation? I think what you're seeing, and you can agree or disagree as a former member of the school board, is I think what we're seeing is a new conservative, politically conservative dominated Board of Supervisors taking a more proactive, may not be the right word, more hands-on approach to this other big budget that they don't really control, but that they clearly do want more say in, and dare I say more control of. Is that what we're seeing? I mean, you're a former member of the school board. You can say candidly, maybe that, are we seeing a little bit of that?
I think that's one way to frame it, Coy. I would point out, and the public often ask about this, why is there this debate between the two boards? And at the heart of it is the fact that school divisions in Virginia do not have taxing authority, right? So
yeah,
they don't hold the purse strings. All they can
A separately elected board.
And they're separately elected.
Yeah.
So they feel responsible to their constituents and the stakeholders in the community that want investments in public education and a quality school division. But
That's what they're elected for.
So that's at the heart of this, right? Is that fact that the school board has to go hat in hand to the Board of Supervisors. And then, as you mentioned, the elections. So new board members came on board and they promised they were going to hold the tax rate the same. And they did that, right?
Yeah.
So they carried out their campaign.
Despite a huge public outcry to not do that. I mean, let's remember that meeting that was held that was flooded with family members, parents and grandparents who have kids in the schools who said, don't choke the schools, don't deprive the schools of money that they need.
And I think that's where some of the communication started to break down, Coy, was that difference of hearing from some constituents, hey, school division's really hurting, they're going to need more money, and then the Board of Supervisors getting feedback from people saying, oh, they're spending too much money as it is, you need to get into that budget, figure it out, and cut it, right?
Right.
Now, there is a limit. I'll get back to the Board of Supervisors here. There's a limit to what they can do on school budget issues. Basically, if they wanted to get specific, they can only get specific in like big general categories. You know, here's X amount of dollars for capital improvements. If it's up to legally, it's up to the school board to decide how to allocate those funds on specific programs and initiatives.
Yeah.
So there's a limit to how much.
But this recent meeting, this it sounds like the Board of Supervisors are saying we want more say, even though legally we're not permitted to control this budget. It sounds like they're trying to get as much control as they possibly can within the legal framework.
That makes it sound a little more overreaching than I think it is.
Okay, fair enough, because I wasn't at the meeting, and I'm just trying to figure out exactly what's going on.
I think they are pushing, they're asking staff on both sides of the local government, the local government staff and school staff, they're asking both, justify your budgets. Remember, they got on board, Coy, saying they wanted to do zero-based budgeting. Right. They wanted to have department heads come in and say, OK, pretend you just started from scratch, rebuild your
budget. But we didn't do that because then they realized that would take months.
But they're still talking about that. So I think their interest in sort of getting into the depths of some of these budgets and really analyzing them further is going to come back.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler. He's the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at SeavilleTomorrow.org. It's Monday afternoon, 23 minutes after 5 o'clock. And 84 degrees in Charlottesville. I hope you're doing well. This is Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. So what's the next step in this process? Are they? It sounds like both sides are committed to creating new ways to work together so that maybe they don't have these problems in the future.
They're going to have some additional joint meetings, and the boards are going to meet in October to discuss the budget. That's the time when they typically set the expectations for what salary increases will or will not be. And for the past several years, there haven't been any salary increases. But it's also when they look at benefits, the health and medical benefits, and how much the employee is going to pay versus the organization. And those expectations need to be set because, keep in mind, what is the majority of the county's budget? It's paying
schools,
people, like schools, and the majority of the school's budget, 80+%
salary,
is people, right,
salary and benefits.
These are people-oriented businesses. So, setting the stage for picking, are we going to increase salaries at all? That is a big driver in the budget. So that's what's going to happen next. There will be some other joint meetings, and it'll lead up to that direction that they give in October, November, December to both the superintendent and the county executive and say, here's what we want you to think about as you prepare next year's budget.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. We're going to take a break here in just a couple of minutes for local news and get a weather update. When we get back, we'll talk about the water issue, the proposed downtown mall for Crozet that would look like Charlottesville's downtown mall, which, on the face of it, I can only say, how cool would that be? We'll talk about
proposal,
that.
Yeah.
But before we break, staying on the subject of schools, you got a big school story in your own life, don't you?
The Wheeler family has shrunk a little bit, Coy. We've dropped off daughter Abby at Vanderbilt University over the weekend. And so our household's a little quieter right now. But it went as well as a parent would ever want it to go.
No
Let
tears.
Put it that way. I did shed a tear. I don't know if Abby saw it, but I was certainly, it's very emotional.
I didn't cry, but I remember both my parents were sobbing.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's because I was the last one to go to school. But
I said to my wife, Jean, I said, Jean, you're not as emotional as I thought you were going to be, right? And I thought I was going to be more emotional too, but I asked Jean, why is that? And she said, well, we're dropping her off at a place where she seems very happy and she's in a good environment.
Yeah.
And so I think that was part of the key.
And she's on a scholarship to play lacrosse.
She'll play lacrosse.
And she's going to start as a first year there at Vanderbilt, right?
She is a first year student. Whether she starts or not, who knows?
She got to earn a place on the team, but she's on scholarship.
She's just another member of the team right now.
And she's from the best girls lacrosse team in Virginia right here at Western Albemarle.
State champions,
Western Albemarle High School.
So anyway, it was a good experience, and we got her moved in and safe, and I think she's having a good time. The next morning when we went by, you can go by for breakfast on your way out of town.
Yeah.
she came to the car and she hugged me and she said, "Dad, I'm so happy I'm here."
You're going to make me cry. That's fantastic, Brian.
So
that's congratulations.
We're excited for.
So one's off out of the nest on her own. Yeah.
Son Sam is at Western Albemarle right now practicing football, so he's got 4 more years at Western Albemarle, and then we'll have this discussion again, I imagine.
Tear him up, Sam. There you go. We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at seavilletomorrow.org. Before we talk about the proposed downtown mall in Crozet, you were at the press conference today, Citizens for a Sustainable Water Supply Plan. Bob Fenwick was in the first hour of this program discussing the details on that. Your thoughts?
I was. We're going to have a story on our site tonight and on the in the Daily Progress tomorrow. You know, I think, Coy, they wanted to respond in advance of the RWSA meeting being held tomorrow, at which the decision makers are going to look at this study. But basically, it was the study that City Council asked for, you know, take another look at the demand analysis, tell us, was Gannett Fleming on the right track? And not just Gannett Fleming, but the previous engineering company, VHB, which did a demand analysis in 1997. So basically, this is a third crack at that question. How much water do we need in 50 years? VHB answered it in 97. Gannett Fleming looked at it in 2004. The Gannett Fleming number, I think, had a lot of questions around it for a number of reasons. One, actual usage has dropped significantly over recent years, right? And so that, in combination with the fact that Gannett Fleming wanted to build a concrete dam at Ragged Mountain, so you had the consultant who wanted to build something, and I think that helped undermine their credibility on that front.
Yeah.
But anyway, another consulting firm, Swartz, has come in and rendered its opinion. The Citizens for Sustainable Water Plan, their main critique, I would say, is that they were frustrated that the consultant did not take into account more seriously the recent trend line, the past 8 to 10 years of water usage in the community. They felt like that was sort of dismissed as a one-time adjustment, and they didn't think that was appropriate. And then Dee Dee Smith, the heart of her remarks had to do with federal legislation that she felt like was going to lead to greater conservation of water, that's part of what we're seeing right now and will be a greater part of the community's water usage trends in the future. And she felt like that was not adequately addressed. So, you know, what do I do in a story? I've got to get both sides of the story, Coy. So I called Dave Norris. I called Ann Malik with the Board of Supervisors. And I called Tom Frederick, of course, and asked them to weigh in. Tom Frederick said he felt like, from the RWSA's point of view, that conservation had been adequately considered in the Swartz Engineering report. That'll certainly be a topic of discussion tomorrow. Mayor Dave Norris said that he was going to hold judgment until he could actually ask questions of this consultant at tomorrow's meeting. Ann Malik said, you know, her read on it was this seems to indicate that she was comfortable with the trend that Swartz was pointing to, and said, you know, what it looks like our long-term water needs are in line with past estimates. And she made the point that, you know, this sort of preparing for the future, she said she'd be comfortable, you know, if the water supply lasted 60 years, you know, to 2070. That was okay with her. She felt like the public was demanding that.
Who said that?
Ann Malik.
Yeah.
Supervisor Ann Malik represents the Whitehall District, but she's the chair of the Board of Supervisors.
And I've heard that from some folks who've said, who cares if we overbuild? We'll be good to go for 100 years instead of 50. You know, let's err on the side of too much water. I've heard that argument before.
So this will be talked about at the RWSA board meeting tomorrow. And then, Coy, in the next month here, it's going to be pretty exciting. I think we're going to be talking about water a lot on this show because a decision's going to be made. I mean, Dave Norris has said once all these studies are in, we will be able to make a decision as Charlottesville City Council. I asked Ann Malik about the prospects of that, and she said that, you know, she hoped there would be a meeting of the two boards, actually the four boards, so the RWSA board, the Albemarle County Service Authority, and then City Council and the Board of Supervisors, that there would be a meeting where they could put their heads together. But she said, Coy, I don't want City Council to come to that meeting until they've actually voted on something. We want to know where they are, is what she said. Have them make a decision, put their questions on the table, come to that joint meeting, and then let's all move in unison out of that.
There you go. And you're working on a story now that will be available. It'll be in the Progress and on your website about this press conference today.
It'll be up tonight. Yep.
There you go. Brian, what's all this about a second downtown mall in Central Virginia, this to be located in downtown Crozet.
We've talked a lot about planning in Crozet because that's one of the master planned communities in Albemarle County. They had a master plan in 2004. It's being revised right now. But one of the geographic challenges that faces Crozet is they have a set of railroad tracks, right, that go right through the middle of town. And that's been the heart of some of the agricultural activity over the years. But it also sort of divides and makes it hard to link the streets in downtown Crozet. Crozet is also facing Old Trail Village, a new development and a new town center that's being built. And now we have in front of us, apparently with the willingness of the property owner, the Barnes Lumber Company is willing to redevelop its property in downtown Crozet. So right next to the railroad tracks in downtown Crozet is this sprawling lumberyard, which covers about almost 15 acres.
And where is that in relation to that coffee shop where we had the... The big
it's right there.
Pie thing.
It's the other end of that parking lot.
Oh, okay. So it's right downtown.
Yeah. So if you know where Crozet Hardware is, if you know where the Mud House is, that there's a little parking lot there across from the assisted living high-rise building.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that parking lot runs into the Barnes Lumber Company. And so the proposal on the table is to redevelop that parcel and create sort of a new Main Street, but also a new pedestrian mall, which would be much shorter than the Charlottesville Downtown Mall. But it would have that the proponents of this plan are advocating for, let's make it like the Charlottesville Downtown Mall.
Yeah.
Let's make it
a pedestrian plaza, basically.
Let's have it be pedestrian friendly.
Benches,
let's have it be
human
scale. Let's have it be mixed use. So not just commercial, but mix in residential with some of these commercial businesses.
But it's right on the railroad tracks, though, right? So we're talking about a sort of pedestrian mall that is bordered on either side by buildings like Charlottesville is. It would be railroad tracks, pedestrian plaza, and then commercial shops,
well,
right?
No, I think the plan that I saw, Coy, did show that the railroad tracks would be on the border, definitely, but that there would be a pedestrian area that was framed on both sides.
So they're talking about a new line of development then right along the tracks that would then face the hardware store.
And maybe even have another row of buildings in between the hardware store in some places further in to that property.
Yeah.
So they're talking
could
about
be very cool.
A pretty interesting project. And certainly I think part of this is, you know, the Crozet Master Plan always intended to connect those streets and have a better network of roads and have that main street from Crozet sort of connect from that hardware store Mud House area over to the area south of ConAgra, the old ConAgra facility, which is now Music Today and Star Hill Brewery. But right now that road dead ends at the Barnes Lumberyard. So this would potentially, you know, lay the groundwork for extending that road all the way over to other parts of the Crozet development
ideally
area.
You move people from like the hardware store over to Crozet Pizza without going through that tunnel. That's
right,
the challenge.
That tunnel is the constrictor point,
yeah,
right, under the railroad.
Exactly. Yep. But that's the challenge. Is how if you create this plaza, this pedestrian plaza, in front of the hardware store and further down into the lumber yard, how do you move people then over the tracks to the library and the Crozet Pizza and those shops over there? I mean, you need like some like skyway stuff.
And the planners often call that, Coy, completing the streets. So that the street does allow.
So you got the lingo down, don't you?
you go to enough of these meetings, Coy, you pick up on a few
That's
things.
That's what they call it, huh?
Completing the streets so that there are avenues for pedestrians, bicyclists, and, you know, again, making
so people
it,
aren't stuck on one side of the railroad tracks.
And the leaders in Crozet, Tom Loach on the Planning Commission, Mike Marshall with the Crozet Advisory Council, that's the group that met last Thursday and endorsed this plan, Mike Marshall's group. And so this will be talked about in the future. This is just going to come forward as a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors and the Planning Commission. Hey, consider rezoning this property in the future so that we can have a Crozet downtown mall.
And, of course, you can rezone it, but then you got to sit back and see if there's some real interest on the part of some investors to come in, private investors,
right,
to say, we want to be a part of this.
The property owner also has to agree to, you know, change the use of their property. Right now, it's a functioning lumberyard. Presumably, this story's out there because they're willing to have this take place.
So what are your thoughts on this? I mean, this could be really cool, couldn't it? We're talking about a total renaissance for Crozet, which already arguably has had something of a renaissance over the last 10 years.
Crozet's been trying to get their house in order, so to speak, with regards to zoning in downtown because they don't want Old Trail and the strip along 250
to become the new
downtown.
To take
away
yeah.
that that business activity from downtown Crozet. So this is seen by these leaders, at least, as a way to reinvigorate even further downtown Crozet and give it new life in the future.
Well, like anything else like this, it's absolutely going to depend on the willingness of the public sector to make things possible and then the private sector to come in and do them. You know what I mean?
And these things take time. You know, so this is an early presentation of this idea. It's certainly going to get refined.
Could be very
as the
cool.
public looks at it. But Bridget Lynn, our intern, this was her last story with us this summer. And take a look at it. It was in
way to go, Bridget.
The Sunday paper yesterday, and it's on our website.
As a sidebar, I can tell you, I can remember back in the mid-90s when they were talking about some development on the south side of the railroad tracks near the train station, right on West Main Street. And I remember it being at some city council meeting where somebody was saying, and we're going to have all these pedestrian bridges that go from the train station out across the railroad tracks into these new buildings. That was the idea then, because I think they were even talking about a sports arena down there. And I think the railroad people were like, no, you're not going to do that. So that's somebody you got to convince first, is because they want to be able to go higher, you know, because they are double stacking those.
Yeah. Well, there is some CSX property involved in this discussion. That's certainly going to be a factor. But I think you're right, Corey. If you go high enough where the trains can say, okay, we're not going to ever come through at that height.
Yeah.
You know, maybe some bridges across would help connect both sides of Crozet.
Yeah, it would be cool. Thank you, Brian, very much.
Thanks, Corey.
You can read about this story and more online at SeavilleTomorrow.org.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.